الحمد لله وكفى والسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ولله على الناس حج البيت من استطاع إليه سبيلا سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون والسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. As a recap of yesterday, basically we began a discussion of the days of Hajj and what occurs in that 5 to 6 day period. So remember that on the very first day, you leave for Mina. Remember that basically there's three major areas that you need to be familiar with as we go through the Hajj. There's Mina, Muzdalifah, and Arafah. So on the first day you leave for Mina, and once you leave for Mina, basically you're going to pray 5 prayers in Mina. We talked about that in detail yesterday. After the 5th prayer, which will be Fajr, you will then head towards Arafah. Arafah is about 6 miles from Mina. Once you arrive in Arafah, you'll begin your wukuf. Ideally, that wukuf begins by being in the Masjid Namra, listening to the khutbah, and praying 2 prayers together, the Dhuhr prayer and the Asr prayer, each with their own independent iqama. After that, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam left the masjid and then went towards Jabal Rahma and performed wukuf at the base of Jabal Rahma, where he stood and made dua and obviously begged for forgiveness for the community, for his ummah. Now, that's the ideal situation, but what really happens when we go for wukuf is that we end up in a tent and we're pretty much far away from the masjid, and many of the tents look similar, so we don't have the opportunity to go to the masjid. So as I mentioned, our wukuf will pretty much be in the tent and we'll pray our prayers in the tent. Once the sun sets in Arafah, then we will head towards Muzdalifah. And the goal in Muzdalifah will be to arrive sometime before the Fajr prayer, so that we can combine the Maghrib prayer and the Isha prayer in Muzdalifah. Once we've combined the Maghrib and Isha prayer in Muzdalifah, which is basically one adhan, one iqamah, and then the 2 prayers, after which we follow up with the sunnah of each of those prayers. Once we do that, then the goal is to collect the pebbles that we will use to pelt Shaitan. So we'll spend the evening collecting the pebbles, worshipping, taking rest if necessary, so that we can get ready and be present for the wukuf in Muzdalifah, which basically begins at dawn and lasts until sunrise. Okay, so this is just basically all a summary. Now, once we perform the wukuf in Muzdalifah, then we will shortly before sunrise, ideally, which doesn't always occur because of the bus schedule, we will head towards Mina. And this is where we left off yesterday. So that was all a summary, a review basically, and now we're going to continue. So just before sunrise, the goal from Muzdalifah will be to get on a bus and head towards Mina. And as we do that, we will be making dhikr and we will be making talbiyah. Now again, we're not in control of exactly when we leave, but it'll be sometime either just before sunrise or after sunrise, and then obviously we'll head towards Mina. When we reach Mina, this is a really busy day. We basically have 4 major things that we're going to try to perform in a 1 or 2 day period. The first thing that we're going to want to do is to pelt the shaitan, which we're going to pelt one single shaitan. That's a wajib act. The second thing we're going to do is we're going to sacrifice an animal, which is also a wajib act. Then we're going to either trim our hair or shave our hair, which is the preferable means of exiting from the clothing of the ihram. And then finally, we're going to perform something called tawaf al-ziyarat. And what I want to do now is to go through each of these acts independently. Now, of these 4 acts that I listed, the first 3 must be performed in the order in which I've listed them. So, pelting the large shaitan, sacrificing the animal, and then trimming or shaving the hair, all of these 3 things will be in that order, as stated. The tawaf al-ziyarat can be done anywhere in that order. And we'll talk about that again momentarily. Okay, so what's the first goal? Once we arrive in Mina, the first goal is to march towards Shaitan and to pelt the large Shaitan. Now, the pelting is actually called Rami. This is the term that's used for the pelting. And the term rami basically refers to throwing little stones at each of three pillars, which are called jamarat. Now, actually, it's the pebbles that are really the jamarat. The term jamarat refers to the pebbles. But technically, because you throw these pebbles at the pillars, they are also called the jamarat. Now, these pillars, they're not like the target. You know, you don't have to hit the pillar, and we'll talk about this in more detail. They mark a vicinity in which your stone has to land. And I'll show you this in more detail. The historical significance of this act is that each of these three pillars mark a relative vicinity or a general area where Shaitan was pelted by Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam. Now the story basically is, or the history basically is, I should say, is that Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam actually saw a dream. Inni ara fil manami anni azbahuka. That he saw in his dream that he is sacrificing his son. And so when he saw in his dream that he was sacrificing his son, he went to his son and he approached him and he said, I see this in my dream, what do you say? So his son said, Ya abatif al ma tu'mar, O my father, do what you have been commanded to do. So both he and his son, they headed towards Mina, where Ibrahim alayhi salam was going to sacrifice his son. Now on the way, Shaitan came at three individual spots because Shaitan recognized the power of this act and did not want this act to occur. So at three individual places, Shaitan showed up. And at each place where Shaitan showed up, give me 1 second, now I'm recognizing that. Actually, I want to pull up a different file if I can find it. All right, at the three places where Shaitan showed up, Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam actually pelted the Shaitan with these stones. And when he pelted the Shaitan with these stones, in each spot, Shaitan sunk back into the earth. So these three pillars mark those three independent spots where seven pebbles were casted at Shaitan and Shaitan sunk back into the earth. Okay, so the Rami is done on several days. And the first day in which the Rami is done is actually on the 10th, which is this day that we're talking about currently. What happens on the 10th is that after you arrive in Mina, coming from Muzdalifah, you then take your pebbles with you and you march towards the Shaitan with the goal of pelting the large Shaitan. Now there's actually three individual pillars. You're going to pelt the large one. How are you going to know which one is the large one? It's the one that's located furthest from Masjid Khayf. Now, there's a big masjid called Masjid Khayf, and actually you're gonna have a map when you're in the tents. They give you a map and it's very clear where you're going and you'll know what you're aiming for. And it'll be obvious because everybody will be at that single pillar, so you'll be able to tell which one you need to pelt. But it's the one that's located farthest from this masjid called Masjid Khayf, which you'll see when you're on your way there. And this is the only Shaitan that we're going to pelt on this day. So it's bid'ah to pelt the other Shaitans on this day. There's three pillars, but we're only going to pelt one. Now, this Rami on the 10th actually has a very restricted time period. This pelting has to occur somewhere between the dawn on the 10th day to the dawn of the 11th day. So there is a 24-hour window in which a haji has an opportunity to complete this pelting. And if they miss it, they're going to owe a dam. Now, within that window, there are sub-windows of time in which it's either makruh, sunnah, or mubah to pelt. So, from dawn to sunrise, that's makruh. From sunrise to zawal is the sunnah. Okay? Zawal means the zenith, the peak, when the sun peaks. From zawal to sunset, that's mubah. Mubah is an Arabic term which means neutral. It's neither sunnah nor is it makruh, disliked. And then finally, sunset to dawn is makruh, which means disliked. Now you can see that sunrise to zawal is actually the sunnah, but that is the most crowded time. And that's when you hear all these stories about people getting trampled and this many people passed away and this many people were injured. That's exactly what happens in this window. Because it's so many people and everybody's trying to squeeze into this time, either because it's a sunnah or because they want to hurry up and get everything done to get out of the ihram. So basically you've got a lot of people heading there with the same purpose. The people who want to do the sunnah are trying to get in to do the sunnah. The people who want to do it quick and get out are trying to get in to, do it quick and get out, and it becomes very, very crowded. So most people don't go at this time. And in fact, your mu'allim will be very particular about this. You know, you may not see your mu'allim very often, but on this day he'll be standing outside of your tent and saying, don't go now, don't go now, don't go now. We will give you your time when you should go. And they've tried to work out this system where they schedule each different group or area to go. It works out, sometimes it doesn't. But basically, most people, most of the American groups don't go at this time. So what we usually do is that we wait until the mubah time, which is zawal to sunset. And you know, it really depends on when you show up. Sometimes you go there and there's just very few people there. I mean, very few people still means thousands, okay? It's just not tens of thousands. So there's relatively few people there and you can easily do the pelting. Some people, some ulama have argued that although sunset to dawn is makruh, that actually is the best time because it's the safest time. So it really depends on the scholar that you're with. For women, for sick people, and for the disabled, there is no such thing as a makruh time. They can do it any time within this window, so long as they confirm that it's safe for them to do so. Okay? So this is basically the pelting on the 10th day. Now there are some, this is basically what it looks like. There's three individual pillars and they're about 150 meters from each other. And on the first day, you're only going to pelt the large one, which is the one that's furthest from the masjid. And it looks exactly like this. Look at the picture on the top. Do you see, first of all, there are that many people, okay? It's that crowded. And then do you see the pillar? And then do you see the wall around it, okay? The goal is to get the stone in that circle. That's not the goal. You have to get the stone in that circle. So you aim for the pillar, but you don't have to nail the pillar. You just have to get it someplace in that circle. You're aiming for the pillar, and the stone needs to fall in that circle. So keep that in mind. Now, how are you going to do this pelting? You're going to stand, and you're going to face the large shaitan. Ideally, the masjid will be on your right, and Mecca will be on your left. Then you're going to take your pebbles, and one at a time, you're going to hold the pebble like this, between the index finger and the thumb of the right hand. Okay? And then you ideally should raise the hand about this high, and you should take the stone and you should pelt at that pillar so that you land in that circle. And when you throw, you're going to say, Bismillahi Allahu Akbar. Okay? And actually there's another dua that people say, Raghman lishaytan waridan lirrahman. You know, basically what you're saying is that this is a disgracing of shaytan. And a pleasure for Ar-Rahman. It's a means of pleasing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So that's what should be done. Now, all of that takes a lot of time to raise your hand like this and to actually aim and say these du'as and stuff, and you really don't have that much time. So what you're really going to be doing is just basically Bismillah, Allahu Akbar, Bismillah. You're going to do them as fast as you can. Because you're really pressed in there. You get in there, you do it, and you want to be able to get out. Now, once you throw that first pebble and you hit that area, the talbiyah of Hajj ends. So all this talbiyah, labbaik, Allahumma labbaik, it's done. You will no longer say that through the rest of the Hajj. So that's a very major milestone. The talbiyah ends. Now, again, as I mentioned, the pebble has to hit that pillar, or it has to fall within the area of that pillar surrounded by the wall. So it's got to fall in that circle. And every pebble has to be independent. You can't take all seven and just throw them. Each throw basically counts as one. Now, four of the seven pebbles have to be done properly for the rami to occur, otherwise you incur a dhamm. It will not have counted. So of the seven pebbles, you have to score with four of them. Otherwise, you didn't do it. So it means that of those four, they have to be a single throw, and it has to land within that area. Once four have landed, then you've at least obtained the rami. If all seven occur, then you're fine. If it's someplace between, let's say, five or six, then for every one that you missed, you have to give a little bit of sadaqah. So that's something that we'll talk about later, but you have to give a little bit of sadaqah. There is no dua to be made after pelting the large shaitan. So you won't make any dua, you simply pelt and you'll step away. Okay, now there's a couple practical points that I want to mention that aren't here, and then I'll talk about what's on this slide. One thing that you have to recognize, number one, is that if you drop your stone, you do not go to pick it up. If you go down, you're not coming back up. It's that crowded. Whoever bends down, they're gone. You'll get trampled, You'll get bumped. You just will not. It's very hard to stand back up. And that the whole crowd is moving as a sea. You know, it's just an ocean of people moving together. You have no control over your movement. You just go in the wave and then you get thrown back out. You know, as people are coming in and they're coming out. It's that much crowd. So if you drop a pebble or you drop all your pebbles, you let them go, get out, and then worry about taking care of it some other way. You know, you'll go back to your group and maybe somebody has extra pebbles, etc. Okay, that's one thing. The second thing is that if your shoes go, you don't try to get them. You'll see that if you go there, when you're pelting, the whole floor is full of shoes. Shoes are lost, well, for two reasons. One, shoes just fall off. And you can't even stand because it's so slippery because you're standing on these shoes and there's no good grip. And you'll see there's these big tractors that come in and they just they push up all the shoes every so often and there's a huge mountain of shoes. That's how many shoes get lost. But you never go down to get your shoe because if you go down, you're not coming back up. Okay, the other thing that you see at this place is that now people basically, they want to take revenge for a lifetime worth of headache from Shaitan. So they're not content with these stones. They want much more. So they start taking off their shoes. They start taking everything, bottles, whatever they can throw to get him for what's been done. Well, what you have to understand is that actually that is not that the biggest detriment to Shaitan is the little stone, because the little stone is the sunnah. And the worst thing that Shaitan, the thing that is most disgracing to Shaitan is the throwing of the stone, because it's the sunnah, and the sunnah is what disgraces Shaitan. So no matter what else you throw, you're not going to be able to disgrace Shaitan the way that the stone does, because that's the sunnah. All right. Now, if an individual, anybody who can get to the Jamarat must go there. So it doesn't matter if you're scared or you saw this thing on CNN last year and you don't want to go, you have to go. So you have to pick a time that you feel is safe or someone tells you is safe, but you have to go yourself if you can go. If you can't get there, what we mean by can't get there, meaning you cannot walk whatsoever, and there's absolutely no transport, then you can send a proxy. Or if you're extremely sick, you can't even stand, you know, really sick, then you can send a proxy. What does a proxy mean? Basically, you say to your friend, here are my seven stones, throw yours, and after you throw yours, make niyyah and throw mine. Crowding is not an excuse. Being scared is not an excuse. You can go there and you can find a time where you'll be able to do it. So basically, keep these few rulings in mind as you think about the Rami. Once the Rami is completed, now you have to go and sacrifice an animal. It's very similar to exactly what Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salam was doing, right? He was heading towards there. Shaitan popped up. He threw the stones. Shaitan fell back in the ground. And then he continued and then proceeded with the sacrifice of his son. Although, obviously, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala exchanged his son with an animal. So it's the exact same thing. You finished your pelting of Shaitan, so now you're going to go and you're going to sacrifice an animal. This sacrifice of an animal is called dam shukr. All right? It is a sacrifice that's done out of thankfulness. And what's the thankfulness? The thankfulness is that you were given the ability to do both Umrah and the Hajj in this period of time. So the only people who have to sacrifice are the ones who were able to do both the Umrah and the Hajj together. So the person who does Hajj Qiran, because they did them both in one ihram, and the person who did Hajj Tamattu, because they did them both in two ihrams. Both of those people, they must offer a sacrifice. If somebody did Ifrad, in which they only did the Hajj and they did not do the Umrah, then they don't have to sacrifice. It's mustahab, but they do not have to sacrifice. Now this sacrifice is different than the sacrifice that we do every year for Eid. That Eid sacrifice that we do, you know, when it's Eid al-Adha and we offer a sacrifice, that Eid sacrifice, which is called a qurbani, is wajib on every individual and is a separate sacrifice. That sacrifice is wajib on a sane, adult, wealthy individual who is not a traveler. So the reason why you're not doing your qurbani is because you're a traveler. If you make an intention to be in Mecca Mukarramah for 30 days, you are a resident and you will also have a qurbani done for you. So the only reason you're not doing a qurbani on this journey is because you are a traveler. So keep in mind that these are two separate sacrifices and sometimes are confused by people. All right. Now the animal that is sacrificed has to meet certain legal requirements. And we're not going to go into those legal requirements because really you don't have much of a choice. The government arranges for the animals, and they know what the requirements are, and they'll fulfill the requirements for you. You don't have much of a choice. You'll sacrifice either a goat or a sheep, which covers yourself, or you may take one share in a cow, which would cover seven people. So seven people might get together and sacrifice one cow. The ideal situation is that you slaughter the animal by your own hand. That's the ideal situation. If it's not possible, then it's still mustahab to watch your animal be sacrificed. And it's also mustahab to take the meat from the sacrifice and to divide it into one-third, one-third, one-third. One-third for sadaqah, one-third for friends, and one-third for yourself. So this is basically how you divide it, and these are the types of animals that are sacrificed. Now, it's mustahab to also eat from the meat. And again, this is all ideal, and now I'm going to tell you the practical in a minute. But basically, here's what happens practically. It's really hard to get to the slaughterhouse. Even if you get to the slaughterhouse, it's hard to, you're never going to know which is your own animal, because they're just sacrificing, sacrificing, sacrificing. You know, there's probably, what, hundreds of thousands of animals, if not tens of thousands, that are being sacrificed. They're not going to call you over and say anything, that this is your animal or this is somebody's animal. They just do it rapid fire, because they're just trying to get everybody's sacrifice done in this period of time. So you're really probably not going to be able to do it by your own hand. You're probably not going to be able to watch, and you're definitely not going to be able to get your hands on the meat. It's pretty hard. You'd have to, if you make some extra effort, you can probably get to the slaughterhouse, but it's very complicated to find it. You never really know what time they're doing it, where it's occurring, so it's probably not going to be possible. What's going to happen is that your group leader will organize for everyone's sacrifice, and he will basically tell you, he basically will have a cell phone with him, and the person he assigns to do the sacrifice will call and say, okay, everybody's sacrifice is done. So they'll set a time and they'll basically come and tell you, okay, your sacrifice is done, move on to the next step. Or you're going to do your pelting, and then you need to do the sacrifice. And then once you know that your sacrifice is done and you've been told that your sacrifice is done, then what's going to happen is that you are going to remove the hair from the head. So how are you going to remove the hair from the head? There are two options. Number one, you can shave, and that is the best option, and that is the most highly recommended option. But that is for men only. And number two, you can trim, which can apply to either men or women. What does trimming mean? So now you have to understand what does trimming mean. Shaving is pretty straightforward. Obviously, all the hair is going to be removed. Trimming basically means that you take 1 inch of the hair from 1/4 of the head, so in an area of 1/4 of the head, and remove 1 inch of hair from that area. Now that's the minimum, but ideally what you want to do is the whole head. So over the entire head, you remove 1 inch of hair. If an individual has short hair and it's less than 1 inch, they have to shave. There's no choice. So keep that in mind. Women, the way they do it is that they part their hair into three parts, and then basically across each area they run a scissor across about 1 inch long or 1.25 inches of hair, and they basically cut their hair in that way. So this is the way in which the hair will be shaved or will be trimmed. Okay, what should be done is that ideally the person should be facing the Qibla, and you should begin from the right side and then have the hair removed. If an individual has completed his rites of Hajj, he can trim or shave his own head, or he can trim or shave the head of another person. And once the hair is removed, right, this is the third act. So you did the pelting, then you did the sacrifice, and then you remove the hair. Once the hair is removed, your ihram is over, for the most part. Now you are free from all the restrictions of ihram. You can put on scent, you can put on stitched clothing, you can take off the two sheets, you can comb your hair, not worrying about whether hair is coming out if you have any hair left. And then basically the only thing left is that one prohibition of romance and marital relations, that prohibition remains. You still cannot engage in anything of that nature. So the one prohibition that will remain from the state of ihram will be the romance or the marital relations prohibition. Everything else can be done. So now the fourth thing you're going to do is called tawaf ziyara. Tawaf ziyara basically means that you go back to Mecca Mukarramah and you perform a mandatory tawaf. Now, this is one of the three mandatory pillars of Hajj. Remember what the pillars were? Being in a state of ihram, showing up in Arafah for within that time window, and then this tawaf ziyarah. These three things, they have to be there for the Hajj to occur. So you're going to return to Mecca Mukarrama, and you're going to perform tawaf. And this tawaf has to be done sometime between dawn on the 10th to the sunset of the 12th. Now remember, tawaf ziyarah can be anywhere. You could do it first and then come back and do the pelting and then do the sacrifice and then trim or shave your hair. So ideally, you want it to be the last act, but it can be done anywhere. If you delay past the 12th, the sunset of the 12th, then you end up taking a penalty and you owe a dam. So you have to sacrifice an extra animal for delaying it. The only people who have an excuse to delay in which they will not have a dam is a menstruating woman. She is not allowed to perform tawaf, so she will have to wait until her cycle is over, and then she will then perform the tawaf and will have no penalty on her, despite the fact that she may have had to delay it past sunset of the 12th. All right, again, as I mentioned, the tawaf ziyarah can be performed before, after, or in between the sequence, and the sequence is what? Rami, Nahar, Halak, or Qasr. Those three acts have to be in order. All right, but the sunnah is to do it at the very end, after shaving the head. If you happen to perform tawaf ziyarah early, let's say you do the rami, and then you're waiting for your sacrifice, and your group leader says, look, it's going to be another day that the slaughterhouse closed and they couldn't get ours done, you can go back to Mecca Mukarrama and you can do your tawaf, but nothing will change about your ihram. Your state of ihram will remain. You will not be able to get out of that state until you complete the shaving of the head. So that's another important point to keep in mind. Tawaf ziyarah happens to be one of those tawaf that's going to be followed by sa'i. So you need to perform sa'i after tawaf ziyarah. You're going to perform the tawaf exactly as we described in the Umrah lecture. So the whole same thing about finding the black stone, moving a little bit to the right of it, facing the Kaaba, making your niyyah, exposing your right shoulder because there's going to be sa'i afterwards. And then basically lining up with the stone, but facing your chest towards the black stone, you know, with your feet in the direction of the flow, and then saying Bismillahi Allahu Akbar, everything that I mentioned in the Umrah lecture, all of that applies to this tawaf. After you do the tawaf, as we mentioned in the Umrah lecture, then you're going to offer 2 rak'ah at or near Maqam Ibrahim, most likely someplace away from it, as we mentioned in that lecture. Then you're going to go to Multazam, make dua, go to Zamzam, drink, make another istilam, and then finally go and perform sa'i. Now after you perform sa'i, then you're going to return to Mina. And then it's sunnah to spend the next 3 nights in Mina. And it's makruh to spend the night anyplace else. So once you've done this, you're going to get back on the bus, you're going to go back to your tent in Mina, and then basically you're going to remain there for the next 2 to 3 days. Alright, so then you're going to go to sleep, you're going to be very tired, you wake up the next day, and now you're on day 4, which is the 11th. There's only one thing you have to do on this day. So now everything is basically, it's all downhill after this difficult day. The only thing you have to do on this day is you have to go and you have to pelt all 3 pillars, all 3 shayateen. So what you're going to do is you're going to wait for the appropriate time, and you will go to the pillars, and then you will pelt the small one, then the middle one, and then the large one in that order. And the small one is defined as the one that's closest to Masjid Khayf. Remember I told you that the large one was farthest away, and that the small one is closest to the masjid. Now what happens is basically the timing for this pelting is restricted. It has to occur between Zawal, which is a little bit before Dhuhr, and it ends at dawn on the 12th. So you have a restricted period of time, less than 24 hours. If you perform between Zawal and sunset, that's the sunnah. Otherwise, if you perform after sunset, it's makruh. But the same ruling applies. If you're sick or it's just too crowded, that could be potentially an excuse. But if you're sick or if you are elderly, then it's okay to go ahead and do it after sunset. Usually if you go right before sunset, let's say like after Asr but before Maghrib, it's relatively less crowded at that time because people try to do it as early as possible. Okay, what's going to be the method? There's a little bit of difference here, so you need to know the details. But basically, you're going to start with the small jamarat, the small pillar. And what you're going to do is the same manner. You hold it between the index finger and the right thumb. You know, Bismillahi Allahu Akbar, throw the stone. 1, 2, 3, keep throwing it. You're going to throw 7 of them. Once you've done the small jamarat, then you're going to move away. You're going to face the Qibla. And you're going to make dua with your hands raised for about the time it would take to recite 20 ayah. So you'll stand there and make some significant dua. Then what you're going to do is you're going to go to the middle shaitan. Then over there you're going to do the exact same thing. 7 stones, exactly the way we described previously. Then you're going to come back out. And then you're going to face the Qibla. And you're going to make dua for about the time it would take to recite 20 ayah. Then you're going to go to the large shaitan. There you're going to pelt, but you're not going to make dua after pelting that shaitan. So just like the first day, where we pelted and we did not make dua, any time you pelt the large shaitan, you never follow up with a dua. The small one gets dua, the middle one gets a dua afterwards, but the large one never gets a dua. After you do this, you're going to go back to your camp. And then you'll spend the night at Mina and wait for the next day. So the next day will be day 5. That's going to be the 12th. And it's the same thing. There's nothing new on this day. Yeah, it's again wajib to do rami of all 3 of the jamarat. Same thing as day 4. Exact same rulings. The only thing you have to keep in mind on day 5 is that now on day 5 you have a choice. You can pelt and go back to Mecca Mukarrama, or you can pelt and go back to your tent. Now if you pelt and go back to your tent and you do not leave Mina before dawn of the 13th, then you're locked into doing one more set of jamarat. Alright? So you basically have, after your pelting, which is going to be sometime between Zawal, right, because it's the same timing, Zawal to dawn, after your pelting, if you stay in Mina and the dawn falls upon you, meaning you see the 13th day, you are now locked in to repelt all 3 shayateen. If you leave before that, that's fine, then you do not have to pelt on the 13th day. So the sunnah is to actually pelt on the 13th day, and so many groups will actually stay and pelt for that day as well. The 13th day, which is day 6 of the Hajj, the 13th of Dhul-Hijj, right, which is day 6 of the Hajj, basically, Rami is of great merit on this day, but it's not wajib, as I mentioned. If you happen to go back to Makkah Mukarrama or leave from Mina, you don't have to do it. The timings are a little bit different on this day. Basically, from dawn to Zawal is makruh. Remember that the timings were previously beginning at Zawal, now we're beginning at dawn. So dawn to Zawal is makruh, and after Zawal, all the way to sunset is the sunnah. So basically what you'll do is you'll wait till Zawal, you'll go, you'll pelt the small shaitan, make dua, pelt the middle shaitan, make dua, pelt the large shaitan, no dua. And then you'll basically, with that, your hajj is officially complete. So what you'll do then is you'll pack up your stuff and you'll return to Mecca Mukarrama. Now when you return to Mecca Mukarrama, you want to recognize that you should spend your time usefully. Because really, this is a really unique state that you're going to be in. Basically, you're a newborn child. All your sins, inshallah, will have been forgiven. Basically, the reward of an accepted hajj is Jannah. So now you're sitting pure, and it's just basically your opportunity for nur upon nur. Imagine how your salahs must be accepted, and how extra tawafs would be accepted, and your recitation of the Quran, what kind of state you're going to be in. So you really want to max out on this particular time. So what are some of the recommended acts that you should do? Number 1, perform some extra tawafs. Now, that is the most recommended act. If you have to choose between something supererogatory to do, the most recommended thing to do is extra tawaf. And the reason is because you're not going to get an opportunity to do tawaf except here. You can do extra salah someplace else. You can recite the Quran someplace else. But that tawaf is unique to that place. So you want to do as many extra tawafs as you can, and all of the rulings that I told you about tawaf, they all apply to any extra tawaf, except you're going to be in your normal clothes, so you're not going to pull your right shoulder out of your shirt, right? So you're not going to worry about that, because you're never going to follow up the nafl tawaf with sa'i. So you're never going to expose the right shoulder. Basically, you're just going to make 7 circuits, and you'll be done. There's nothing more when you do the extra tawafs. So spend as much time as you can making tawaf. Spend as much time as you can reciting the Quran. Remember that every salah in jama'ah receives the reward of 100,000 salah. The hadith of the Prophet ﷺ that establishes 100,000 time reward for salah applies to the jama'ah salah. So you want to make sure, obviously, that your prayers are in jama'ah. These are some obvious things. Now, once the 13th day passes, the 13th of Dhul-Hijj, you can go ahead and perform Umrah as well. Remember that in the whole year, there are only 5 days when Umrah is disliked, right? In which time you basically cannot perform Umrah. And those are the days of Hajj. So once the 13th day completes, you now have the opportunity to perform extra Umrah if you want. Now remember, you're sitting in the Haram, and you are in your normal clothes. And in order to perform Umrah, you have to re-enter Ihram. So if you want to re-enter Ihram to perform Umrah, you have to leave the border of the Haram, which is the closest place is Masjid Aisha. So you'll basically go to a taxi driver, take your Ihram with you, and say, please take me to Masjid Aisha and bring me back. So they know everybody does this. It's a routine thing. So they'll tell you, you know, this is however many riyals it's going to cost you to go. You're basically going to get in the taxi. He'll take you all the way. Over there they have showers. And there's a masjid as well, a very beautiful masjid actually. So you'll go there, you'll take a shower, you'll put on your ihram, you'll go into the masjid, you'll pray your 2 rak'ah, you'll face the Qibla sitting, you'll make your niyyah for Umrah, and then you'll recite the talbiyah, labbaik Allahumma labbaik, and now you are locked into the ihram. And you're ready to perform your Umrah. Then the taxi will actually be waiting for you outside. He'll bring you back. The driver will bring you back, and then you can perform the Umrah as we, with all the details that we mentioned in the Umrah lecture. So if you want to perform extra Umrah, that's fine. Now remember that I recommended that you don't perform extra Umrah before the Hajj, because you're going to tire yourself out. So when you get, if you get there a few days early, before the days of Hajj, don't start performing Umrah upon Umrah. You're going to get tired. You want to save your energy for the Hajj. It's after the Hajj, when, you know, you've pretty much done the deed that you went for, that if you want to perform extra Umrahs, that's fine. But I guarantee you, they're tiring. You'll see. It's very easy to think maybe I'll do 3-4 extra Umrahs. Even one is very tiring. This is not a small act. It's not just about walking around a square building. You're walking around the house of Allah, and there is a lot of emotion, and there's a lot of spiritual effect that occurs through that, and it really tires out an individual. Okay, the very final thing that you have to do in order to fulfill the rites of Hajj is called Tawaf Wida. Tawaf Wida means the farewell Tawaf. What's the farewell Tawaf? This is a wajib Tawaf for any type of Hajj, whether you did Qiran, Tamattu' or Ifrad. Whichever Hajj you did, this is a wajib Tawaf that you do basically right before you leave Mecca Mukarramah, sort of to say goodbye to the Kaaba, and to say, and basically to thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala one final time for allowing you this great opportunity. It is wajib, and it's performed any time after tawaf ziyarah. So let's say that you're in a rush, and you have to get on your plane, and you know, you just have enough time to make tawaf ziyarah. Then what you'll do is you'll just go around, make tawaf ziyarah, complete your sa'i, and come right back and make tawaf wida. It can be that quick after tawaf ziyarah. But really what you want to do is you want to delay it till pretty much the last thing before you leave. Now when we say last thing before you leave, it doesn't mean the bus is waiting for you and you're running back and you're just quickly doing it. We mean that basically towards the end of your trip. And some people have this misconceived notion that once I perform tawaf ziyarah, I can't go near the masjid anymore because I've already said bye, so I can't go back. That's not the case, okay? You can still re-enter the masjid. You can still go back there to pray any salah that you have to pray. You can even go back and perform additional tawaf if you want. Sometime towards the very end of your journey, when you can do so comfortably, not when you're worrying about the bus taking off without you, you basically go back and you perform this tawaf. And that's going to be your tawaf ziyarah. If you miss it, you owe a dam. You owe a penalty because you missed a wajib. If there is a woman who is menstruating and she's not able to perform the tawaf, she can be exempted from this tawaf, and she does not have to worry about making it up, and she does not owe a dam. There is no ramal in this tawaf, so you're not going to do that marching action for the first 3 rounds, and there is no sa'i after it. This is just simply a tawaf without a sa'i. And basically, I think I covered all the other points on this slide. So with that, basically, that concludes all the details of the Hajj.